And if you weren't here this morning, I just one more time
I'd like to reiterate my appreciation for y'all as I'll be leaving here in a week or so. This has just been an incredible experience, and I just can't thank y'all enough. But I'd like to begin the sermon this evening with a quick story. An older man named Frank was starting to think that his wife was having a little bit of a hearing problem. He seemed like when he would try to call her or talk to her, sometimes it almost seemed like she would ignore him, and he knew, being the loving couple that they were, that this couldn't be the case, and so thought, okay, yeah, I think she's just grown a little hard of hearing. So one night, he decided that he would test his theory. And so he went into a room kind of far off in his house, or at the end of his house, while she was in the kitchen making dinner, and decided, okay, well, I'll just see how this goes. I'm going to call out to her. So, dear, what's for dinner? First time, there's no reply. So, okay, it seemed like maybe perhaps as he has expected. So he moved a little bit closer and tried again. Dear, what's for dinner? And at this point, he could see her from afar through the hallway in the kitchen, and nothing. I mean, didn't seem to move or budge or anything. So he's getting a little bit concerned, and he moves a little bit closer. Dear, what's for dinner? Nothing. Appalled at this, he's starting to really get worked up, and so he gets all the way almost to the doorway and shouts from right behind her, dear, what's for dinner? And frightened, she turns back to him and said, for the fourth time, meatloaf. And man, I didn't want to say it before, but if it's getting this bad, dear, we might have to get you a hearing aid. Perspective changes everything, doesn't it? It's amazing how our world just can be turned upside down because of perspective. And nowhere is this truth greater than perhaps godly perspective in contrast to man's perspective. Let's look at a passage quickly that demonstrates that. 1 Corinthians 1, verse 18 through 24. Says, for the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it's the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise and bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent. Where's the wise? Where's the scribe? Where's the disputer of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? For since in the wisdom of God, the world through wisdom did not know God, it pleased God through the foolishness of the message preached to save those who believe. For Jews request a sign, and Greeks seek after wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified, to the Jews a stumbling block, and to the Greeks foolishness. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God, and the wisdom of God. And you see that great contrast. I mean, from man's perspective, from human's perspective, it would just seem completely absurd to be able to display glory and power in such a manner as God has chosen. From man's perspective, it seems that a valiant, triumphant death, and perhaps a great battle, a victory of an empire, that seems to be the adequate death of a Savior. Not this death on the cross. I mean, not the death of someone who's been stripped and beaten and who's been humiliated, dying all alone. In man's perspective, this just seems completely foolish. And yet, this is the power of God. And God's perspective is quite a contrast to man's. And as we continue to illustrate this concept, I'd like to direct you to another story. This story has been a favorite of mine growing up, might be a favorite of yours. And it's a story about a little shepherd boy who slays a giant. We're talking about David and Goliath. And it's just incredible how powerful the contrast of a human perspective versus God's perspective and what can be done through God's perspective. And we're going to look at that and see how David represents that godly perspective and how he basically lines up against all these other human perspective. But as we're talking about this, let's go ahead and begin and look at one point just from David as he's being introduced to us. and what exactly a godly perspective entails. But as we're first introduced to David, this happens in 1 Samuel 16. Saul, the current king at the time, he's completely disobeyed God. He's directed his orders blatantly. And because of this, God wants another king. He's rejected him as the king of Israel, and he sets Samuel out to find who that will be, to anoint another one. And who he will anoint will be David. And it's amazing to see how Samuel responds to this occurrence. Let's look at Samuel's perspective for a moment. In 1 Samuel chapter 16, starting in verse 6. So it was when they came that he looked at Eliab and said, "Surely the Lord's anointed is before him." I mean, he's come to the home of Jesse. He sees the eldest son, and he says, "This is it. This is Eliab." I mean, probably someone maybe you've been the oldest, or is obviously the oldest, so might have been the tallest, perhaps the strongest looking. And Samuel perceives how most people do. He looks at the outward appearance and thinks, absolutely, this has got to be God's choice. And if we were going to choose someone to fill a great leadership role, or if we were going to choose someone to slay a giant, we would typically think we would find the big guy. We would find the strong guy. We would find the person that perhaps looked like those superheroes that we know of. Has that kind of figure. Probably someone maybe even like Saul. Someone who's a handsome guy who stood head and shoulders above the rest. But that's not what God's looking for in this case. Samuel has to go down the line. And brother after brother, he'll find David. Look at verse 12. Actually, we'll start in verse 11. And Samuel said to Jesse, "Are all the young men here?" Then he said, "There remains yet the youngest. And there he is keeping the sheep." And Samuel said to Jesse, "Send and bring him, for we will not sit down till he comes here." So he sent and brought him. And now he was ruddy, with bright eyes and good looking. And the Lord said, "Arise, anoint him, for this is the one." I mean, here David comes before him, and that's who he picks. He's the youngest. He's the runt of the family. The youngest of eight. He's, in fact, the shepherd boy. I mean, he's the one who's not the warriors at this time like the brothers are, but he's the one who's told to go out and keep the sheep. And also, you find out he's a musician. He's someone who ends up being called in for Saul, and he's not a musician in the sense of playing a guitar, jamming out. He's playing a harp. Not exactly who we might expect to be the great warrior. And yet, this is who God's pick. And you realize that that's not what it's about for God. He's not looking for these outward appearances, but look in verse 7. But the Lord said to Samuel, don't look at his appearance or at his physical stature, talking about Eliab as he's just rejected, because I have refused him. For the Lord does not see as man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord, he looks at the heart. That's godly perspective. Looking and seeing within. God wants people who aren't big, who aren't strong. They can be those things, but that's not what his purpose is about. He doesn't care if you're athletic or if you're tall or if you're smart. He wants the heart. He wants someone who has a perspective for him, who looks at things with faith, and sees through the eyes of faith. That's what godly perspective is all about. And David, he's that man who has this. And with that kind of perspective, he's going to do incredible things amidst people who do some very foolish and cowardly things. And so we'll go ahead and continue to this great story, this David and Goliath epic situation. And let's go ahead and take a look at the setting from the get-go. Now we're in 1 Samuel chapter 17. 1 Samuel chapter 17. And we'll remain here for pretty much the remainder of our lesson. 17, starting in verse 1. Now the Philistines gathered their armies together to battle and were gathered at Succoth, which belongs to Judah, and they encamped between Succoth and Azekah in Ephes Damin. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and encamped in the valley of Elah. And they drew up in battle array against the Philistines. The Philistines stood on a mountain on the side, and the Israelites stood on a mountain on the other side, with a valley between them. And a champion went out from the camp of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. We can go ahead and skip up to verse 10. And the Philistines said, "I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistines, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. So here you have the setting of this scene. Basically, you have the Israelites, you have the Philistines. They're encamped in this valley of Elah, and they're ready to do battle. And this valley was extremely important, because if the Philistines could take control of this, then they would basically have entry into the hill country of Judah. So this was extremely important that they stand firm in this situation. And the Philistines, they actually had completely superior weaponry. I mean, they were well advanced, and they basically should have been able to take on whoever they would face head to head. But the Israelites had secured a good position, where if they had went ahead and tried to advance and take this territory, they were able to be on these hills, and they would have had the high position, so they could have thrown rocks, and they could have used this great position against them. And so basically, you have a standstill. You come over here and fight. No, you come over here and fight. And because of this, the Philistines decide, we'll send out our champion. We'll send Goliath out, and he will fight. There was this idea in this ancient time that basically, perhaps when armies met, they could just choose one man to fight for them, and they would basically represent the gods of their country. And of course, the more powerful deity would win, and so whoever the victor was, that would represent that, and the battle should be over. And so Goliath comes out, and he begins his taunt against the people of Israel for 40 days. And so here you have the stage. And now we begin the situation that David will bring himself into. See the perspective that he has versus others. Let's start in verse 20. So David rose early in the morning. He left the sheep with the keeper and took the things and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the camp as the army was going out to the fight and shouting for the battle. For Israel and the Philistines had drawn up in battle array, army against army. And David left his supplies in the hand of the supply keeper, ran to the army, and came and greeted his brothers. Then he talked with them. There was the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, coming up from the armies of the Philistines, and he spoke according to those same words. So David heard them. And catch this, verse 24, and all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were dreadfully afraid. So the men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel. And it shall be that the man who kills him, the king will enrich with great riches, will give him his daughter, and give the father's house exemption from taxes in Israel." And then David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, "What shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that should defy the armies of the living God?" And the people answered him in this manner, saying, "So it shall be done for the man who kills him." I mean, from the outset of the situation, we already saw that Saul, the armies of Israel, they're afraid. But here you get some more of that detail, and you see the perspective of the Israelites. You see that human perspective that they have, that absolutely they're afraid. Oh, they're dreadfully afraid, to the point where they flee from him. They don't want to come near this guy. I mean, and they say, have you seen this guy? This guy's huge. And this great man, he defies Israel. At this point, they don't see the way David sees. And you look at the great contrast. David, he doesn't respond in fear. He responds in offense. While the men of Israel, they say, he defies the armies of Israel. David said, he defies the armies of the living God. Who is this uncircumcised Philistine? Instead of fear, he's completely offended. And he begins this great effort to take down this giant. As all these great warriors, these great men, won't dare come before Goliath, David will begin to make his journey to defeat the giant. And the next foe you almost have against David, it's interesting. This is supposed to be about one giant, but as the story continues, it almost seems as David has to fight three enemies or get past three opponents. And the first we see, perhaps, in Eliab, David's brother. Now, Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger was aroused against David, and he said, why did you come down here, and with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your pride. I know the insolence of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle. And David said, what have I done now? Is there not a cause? And then he turned from him toward another and said the same thing. And these people answered him as the first ones did. So Eliab's perspective. You know, Eliab basically treats David as just the pesky younger little brother. I mean, here he comes out. He just wants to see battle. He thinks this is some kind of spectator sport. And he rebukes him for that. I know your heart. I know your pride. You know, get out of here. Do what you're supposed to be doing. That's that human perspective that we see in Eliab. And that's what we see so often in people today. I mean, there's a great lesson we can learn from this person right here in Eliab. There's some times when perhaps people mistake people who truly have the perspective of God and are offended by it, perhaps because of their own inadequacies. You see Eliab, who really, he's just as afraid as all the other men. He hasn't gone forward to fight this giant. And as he sees his brother, who doesn't have the same response that he supposedly should have, he says, surely he's got to be up to something. He can't be doing what's right here. I know your heart. And sometimes, unfortunately, we get that between our brethren here. Not here necessarily, but just in general. You know, we have people who see good-hearted people trying to do what's right, and they mistake that. And instead of encouraging them or wanting to go along with them, they discourage them. They criticize their efforts and their desires and their motives. And perhaps you see this in different occasions where people are wanting to start up some kind of evangelistic effort or something of that nature. And a brother doesn't seem to be too excited about that. And it's interesting. While this person is trying to get something going and trying to do what they think is right for the Lord, you have someone who criticizes, discourages them, and the whole time they're not offering any kind of support or any kind of alternative way. And you know, in those situations, sometimes the best thing to do to win that brother over that's supposed to be on your side, it's simply to go out and do what's right. Do what you know what is right to do. And as you go for and you make victory through Christ, as you slay the giant, they'll witness that. Perhaps they'll come right along with you afterwards. In these situations, don't get distracted from those kind of criticisms. Take it with a grain of salt. Talk to someone else. Do the Lord's work. But you see, again, the perspective of humans, that struggle that it brings versus godly perspective that continues to pursue. And the next opponent perhaps you have, the next human perspective you have is Saul's. Look at Saul's perspective in verse 33. After David comes and basically says, you know what, I'll fight this giant, send me. Saul will respond in verse 33 and said, and Saul said to David, you're not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are a youth, and he a man of war from his youth. Saul, basically, he takes that outward appearance. He sees this great man, this great figure, versus this innocent little boy in the shadow of such. He says, there's no way. There's no way this is going to happen. But Saul forgets, like the men do, that this is not a battle of boy versus man. This isn't even a battle of man versus man. This is a battle between God and his enemy. And David is there to be faithful for God. And David's perspective, he understands that absolutely perfectly. Look in verse 34. David said to Saul, your servant used to keep his father's sheep. And when a lion or a bear came and took the lamb out of the flock, I went after it and I struck it. And I delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it arose against me, I caught it by its beard and struck it and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine, he'll be just like one of them, seeing that he has defied the armies of the living God. Moreover, David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine. And Saul said to David, go, and the Lord be with you. I mean, the way David sees it with this godly perspective, he says, you know what? I remember my past. I remember the struggles that I had. And when these different things arose, God delivered me. And if he's going to deliver me from a lion, if he's going to deliver me from a bear, surely when I come up against this great evil, this great foe, of course God's going to be there for me. That's the kind of perspective that we need to have. Do you realize that those different struggles that you've had in the past, that God delivered you then? Of course, when you suffer the greatest trials in your life, he's going to deliver you. We've got to have that kind of perspective. It's amazing what that kind of perspective can do for us. And interestingly enough, Saul doesn't stop there. He continues and to basically give David trouble. And as David's going to go before him and fight, he tries to clothe him with his armor. Verse 38, so Saul clothed David with his armor, and he put a bronze helmet on his head. He also clothed him with a coat of mail. And David fastened his sword to his armor and tried to walk, for he had not tested them. And David said, I can't walk with these, for I haven't tested them. So David took them off. I mean, again, you see that human perspective. Well, if this boy's going to go and fight a giant, there's no way he's going to stand. And he better have something to defend himself. Let's put all these physical things on him to protect him, to shield him. But David, he'll fight anyway. He realizes that it's not about these physical things. It's about faith. It's about the God who's with him. And what amazes me is that perhaps this is the one time where Saul does seem to have some kind of right perspective. Because Saul is afraid to fight this Philistine. You think about it, this should have been Saul's fight. I mean, Saul's the great warrior of the Israelites. Saul's the commander. He's the one who stands head and shoulders above the rest. But why he has the right perspective, perhaps, in this case, is because he had rejected God. And he understood that if he had rejected God, I'm in a fearful situation. We don't have God. Perhaps that's a time where we absolutely should be afraid. But David, he'll persist, and he'll go ahead and he'll fight this Philistine. Finally, we see this great foe himself. Goliath, as it talks about in verses 4 through 7, he's basically this gargantuan man. He's of greater proportions than I think I can perhaps imagine. It talks about how he had a spearhead that weighed about 15 pounds, how he has armor that perhaps could have been close to 125 pounds. I mean, this guy is enormous. I almost feel like this perhaps is proof of steroids during biblical times. I don't know. And seeing this, you see what Goliath thinks in verse 40. Then he, David, took for himself in his hand, he chose for himself five smooth stones from the brook, put them in a shepherd's bag in a pouch, which he had, and his sling was in his hand. And as he drew near the Philistine, so the Philistine came and began drawing near to David, and the man who bore the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked out and saw David, he disdained him. For he was only a youth, ruddy and good-looking. So the Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, "Come to me, and I'll give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field." I mean, you see his perspective in verse 42. He despises him. Goliath thinks that, you know, they basically sent out a boy to do a man's job. And I can see why he would be angry. Because basically, he would think, you know, they're basically taking away my honor from me. They're going to strip me of my glory, and what I could have is this great, glamorous battle war scene that I'll come out victorious of. They send a boy. And perhaps he thinks, okay, if they think this is a big joke, well, we'll see who's laughing when I tear him to pieces. He thinks that his height, that his stature, that his shield, that his spear, they're going to make him be able to just completely annihilate David. And you see David's response. Verse 45. Then David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with sword, with a spear, with a javelin, but I come to you with the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you. And this day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Then all this assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with sword or spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands." So it was when the Philistine arose, and he came and drew near to meet David, that David hurried and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. And then David put his hand in his bag, he took out a stone, and he slung it, and he struck the Philistine on his forehead, so that the stone sank into his forehead, and then he fell on his face to the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, and struck the Philistine and killed him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore David ran and stood over the Philistine, and he took his sword and drew it out of its sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. I mean, when the Philistine sees that their champion is dead, they flee. And you see that David stands there. See that David is a man with godly perspective. This is someone who gets it. And he sees that this isn't about these physical things. It's not about the armor. It's not about the sword or the spear. But that he has the weapons. He has the shields, the armor of the Lord, as it talks about in Ephesians chapter 6. He's armed himself with these things. And he's able to take down this great giant. And again, he realizes this isn't by the fact that he does have a sling, perhaps. It's not because he's athletic and he's coordinated and he makes the perfect throw, no. He realizes it's a sling full of faith that slays this giant, that God has won the battle for him. He has basically won the victory because he's been able to see things through God's eyes, through faith. And you see the response of the people. Now, when the men of Israel and of Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines as far as the entrance of the valley of to the gates of Ekron, and wounded the Philistines and that fell among the road of Shearim, even as far as Gath and Ekron. David, he makes this great victory. You look at the response of the people, and they rush to battle as well. Because of the faith of one man, because of his godly perspective, their perspective has changed. They realize God, in fact, is with them. God has the victory. Do you see the great things that God can do with just a simple boy and his great faith? See what we can do when we have the perspective of God. We see things through his eyes. When we trust in him, hope in him, believe in him, no battle we come across can we fail with his help. When we fight with God, we're not standing alone, but we have him on our side, and we can take against any army. I want you to realize tonight that if you've had trials before you, the only way to get through them is with God. And if you'd like to make your faith known, to have that godly perspective and obey God, we would love to help you do that. If you would, please come forward as we stand and as we sing.